Word. Space phrasing.
Oh. Hey, that show, dude. That show is one of the best. It's one of the best things I've ever watched, hands down.
It is. It is. It's a classic.
Yeah, it really is, man. I can't get over how crazy they are. Like, just the trash that they be talking is just wild, yeah.
Do they record like all in, you know, in like a big studio with all at the same time, or
the woman that plays Mallory Archer said that they don't.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is, right?
So the hero is the whoever's editing all that together, because the timing is just unreal.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Yeah, they said they don't always record together, and you know, rarely get a chance to see each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. What up?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, that. Hey, see, and the hero is the one who's editing it all together. What up, y'all? You are now rocking on Rap Sucks Radio with your homeboy Track Life and your fam Cav Sakota.
Phrasing.
Space phrasing. Thank y'all for listening, man. This is episode 29. I usually do not say the number of the episode. I don't know why I said it now.
Oh. Yeah. You don't?
No, not normally, no.
Oh, okay.
But either way. Opening question.
Yes, sir.
So yeah, man. Just yesterday, after your third beer, you made a mild complaint about me not using your stories on the show. Yep, you did. You did. So now that you've done it,
I absolutely portrayed my sentiment.
Are you satisfied that this episode is all your stories?
See that? Yes, I guess. But no, I'm totally. I will gladly humble myself. I was. you seem to complain about the fact that I throw, you know, tidbits in the mix at the 11th
hour. If you're
going
to ask for the rundown the day before, then you can't just randomly throw stories in the day of.
This is Rap Sucks Radio office politics.
Exactly. Yes. Right. And whatever.
This. You know what I have to say to you?
All right. I'm listening. You know, I get the.
This is Mr. Shug. Y'all are now listening to Rap Sucks Radio. Check it out.
What up, y'all? Thank y'all for listening to Rap Sucks Radio with your homeboy Track Life and your fam, Kev Sakota.
What up?
AKA Mr. Fussy over here. You know? Fussy about stuff. All right, Kev. Time to serious up just a little bit. We got to talk about who is out here tripping.
Yep.
So, just some preface. This is going to be an interesting conversation because this person is clearly tripping. There is no way around it. But the situation is so brilliantly American. It's so like embodies just like certain like large portions of like American history leading up to now. And you know, anyway. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack about this. Judge Tammy Kemp is out here tripping, like for real tripping.
Who's she?
Judge Tammy Kemp is of the Texas 204th District, faces an ethics complaint from the Freedom From Religion Foundation for her reaction at the end of former Texas police officer Amber Geiger's trial for murdering Botham Jean. Now, who is she? Well, she's the judge that hugged Amber at the end of the trial and handed her a Bible and yeah, did it all very publicly and seemed largely, strongly emotionally affected by this and probably shouldn't have really been presiding over this trial, if we're being honest. But
why do you say that?
Well, she was choking back tears. I just read this story like literally 5 minutes ago, but the young brother that testified that was murdered just an hour ago, as of recording of this episode, or at least it was reported just an hour ago. During his testimony, she was, you know, visibly shaken. During Botham, Jean's brother, when he spoke, she was visibly shaken. She just seemed to be like really, really connected to this. On multiple sides, right? She's a law enforcement, and to, you know, she's part of the legal system, which is basically law enforcement to me. And I'm sorry. Okay. And she's also a black woman. So, you know, I'm sure she was connected to the young man and his family. And I just think maybe she should have removed herself. But, you know, that's my initial thoughts. What are yours?
Now, the one thing that I've seen that I haven't gone in depth to figure out whether it's true or not, was she, and you know, this doesn't necessarily by itself mean anything one way or the other, but was she in fact endorsed by the police, like Officers Association or PAB or whatever it is in that district?
Yes, according to what I saw online. And I believe this article might have alluded. No, this article didn't allude to it. But the law.com article did not allude to that. But yeah, other information has shown that she is endorsed. Yep.
I mean, you know, which, like I said, I don't think that necessarily is, you know, someone's going to get endorsed by the cops.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, exactly. And it doesn't by itself mean that she's in the pocket of the cops or that, you know, obviously she's going to be dealing with cases that have to do one way or another with crimes, and police officers will obviously be involved. So, but that was a bad look.
A terrible look.
Because, you know, it's like you got to kind of understand that, one, I'm jumping to the conclusion that there are not a preponderance of female African-American judges on the bench.
Right.
In that district, you know, let alone across the country. So, you know, just like everybody tells their kids, you're standing for something that goes beyond yourself. So,
right.
So when you hold that position, you don't have to carry that burden, but that burden is something that, you know, means something to somebody. So yeah, if you get that endorsement, cool. But yet, you know, let's keep it real. Justice is blind.
In the
aftermath of that situation.
And you know, I have to shout out my wife on this. And her and I talked about this morning, and she brought up an excellent point. She said, you know, normally the family, at the end of the day, you know, a person receiving a prison sentence isn't going to bring back the family member that is lost, right? But right. Normally the judge's final comments kind of bring peace to the family, right? The judge speaks directly to the defendant and tells them sometimes along the lines of you're trash, you don't belong in society, or what you've done to this family is disheartening and it's disgusting, or things of that nature. Things to make the family, you know, recognize that the law is on their side. You know, that this legal system is fighting for you, the person who was wronged here, you know?
Right.
I understand that his brother, and I'm never going to berate his brother, and it pisses me off that people do, for reasons we can discuss later.
Right.
But in that moment, I don't think the family really received any peace from the judge in her reaction. I understand I understand where she's coming from, and that's her thing, but again, it like you said, let's keep it real, you know? Justice is blind because there was no peace for the family.
Yeah, there's a lot of levels to it, but at the end of the day, there's her position is a very black and white position. Part, you know, no pun, literally no pun intended, it is a lot of she is there, supposed though. To be an unbiased. Well, no, really, like she is supposed to be in interpreting the law, right, and overseeing this courtroom that is supposed to interpret the law. And while there are many reasons why that is a problematic situation and continues to be, her job is pretty cut and dry. And no parts of that job have to do with her comforting, you know, neither victim nor, you know, plaintiff nor defendant.
Right, right.
You know, at the end of the day. And you know, I would be interested to, you know, like, who knows? Like, if the family was reacted like, obviously, there are a lot of people who feel like if it had happened to them, they would have reacted in a different way than the family did, the brother or the mother. You know, if the family had reacted negatively, rather than being as gracious as they were, would the judge have mirrored that? You know what I'm saying? Because there's, to me, that there might be a human element to that. But still, I say the same thing. She shouldn't have. I don't think she should have had any place doing anything like that. You know, the bailiff or whoever else was there, the court officer, it's like, just stay out of it.
Yeah.
You came to work to do a job, and your job does not involve emotion.
And that's kind of the key here. And look, benefit of the doubt, I understand that these things can be emotional. That's why I was like, I'm not sure if she should have really been presiding over this case. Like, it seems to have too big of an effect on you.
Yeah, but you can have emotion.
Right, but exactly.
That's not supposed to affect, you know, what you're doing. And obviously, you know, we're not lawyers, we're not judges. But and then there's the logic involved, which is what I'm leading toward, which you know, regardless of how impartial you may think you are, how well studied you are in the law, in jurisprudence, you are an African American person and an African American woman who is presiding on the bench in Texas.
Yep.
Have you comforted every young black man who has come as a defendant in your court?
That was my question.
In the same manner, you know what I mean? And giving them a Bible. Do you have a box of Bibles behind your you know, behind the bench?
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. You know, because we're going to find out pretty quickly whether or not that's the case, right?
Yep.
You know, and then you do have a problem. You know, then your credibility legitimately called into question. So you know, that's the first thing I sort of was. I was like, I mean, you know, we don't have time for none of that,
right? We really don't. And I think overall, like, this one is conflicting for me because the bailiff and the judge are absolutely in the wrong. I refuse to speak ill of the young man. I don't know. It was such a senseless loss of his brother. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Right. I don't know how he's supposed to react or whatever. I just think criticizing him is trash, period. But the reason why I wrote that I was conflicted on this one, because, you know, we should be upset with Amber Geiger.
Right.
But somehow, at the end of these things, we always are upset with a black person. Hmm. And the fallout and the attack seems so much more vicious to me when it comes down to it. Like, I'm always like, man, we always end up screaming on each other. At the end of the day, the one, you know, the one person that we're going to go hard about is each other. And I've noticed this about people of color in general. I almost feel like, and you know, this is just me feeling a certain way about it, but I almost feel like we do that to comfort white people. Like, see, we'll be just as hard on each other as we are on you. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I hate that. I really dislike it. I know, you know, how it all feels. And I understand, you know, I understand that everybody thinks that they'd be Harriet Tubman or Nat Turner and, you know, shoot their own people if they weren't down for the struggle, whatever. But A, that's a goofy ideology to begin with, and neither one of them employed that. And the other is, where do you find this, like, vitriol? You know what I'm saying? Like, you should almost be able to dismiss it. I could recognize that Judge Tammy Kemp was absolutely wrong, but I don't need the vitriol. I could just be like, look, that's a terrible thing to do. You might want to reconsider your profession, or, you know, this Freedom from Religion Foundation that is making an ethics complaint is dead accurate. But there are a lot of ethics complaints that could be involved, especially if, like you said, she's constantly giving out Bibles and hugs. You know, I understand what you're trying to do, but that is not your place. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I don't know, man. It ends up bothering me even more, because now everybody think Amber cool. Like, not think she's cool, but, yeah, you know, have kind of let her off the hook in a sense. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, everybody wants to see the perfect ending to the story. And when you put it in the context of a story that I mean, let's all be real. She did not get the amount of time that somebody who had a different profession and looked different from her would have gotten in the exact same situation. Absolutely. Given the same circumstances. That is about as close to an empirical fact as you can get. So, yes, we should be focused on that. But, you know, we were all surprised that she even was found guilty.
Yeah,
that
she even got any time at all. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is a comment on everybody involved, you know, both us and the system, which is like that, you know, that should tell you something about how we're conditioned to sort of experience this situation.
Well, I think the word conditioned is actually, you can remove that, how we experience the system.
Right.
Where, you know, whether we are prepared for it or not. I mean, I saw it earlier in the week.
But it's like going into a game with a losing attitude. You know what I mean? Like every coach you ever had, it's like, if you go in thinking you're going to get mopped up because the other team is better, you're not going to do as well as if you go in having a little bit more confidence in your
ability.
Right, but
we're such a distance from the result. I remember my immediate reaction when I saw that she was found guilty. I was sort of like, well, so I need to see at least 15 years. Because I know what they were playing the mistake angle really strongly. But I also thought the fact that she had racist text and Facebook posts kind of like says, well, I think you mentioned it yesterday. Like, sure, it was a reaction based on your initial bias. So was it truly a mistake? Or was it, you know what I mean? It's like killing a spider. Like, you saw something dangerous and disgusting to you, so you shot it. That was your first reaction. Not to reason with it, not to ask questions, not to treat it any way with any type of ultimate respect, but just, oh my God, that's that disgusting thing. I'm going to shoot it. And that's what it felt like to me. Now, I wasn't on trial. I didn't get to see her reaction or response. I didn't see any of that. I just was, you know, if I didn't see those texts or tweets or Facebook posts, I might have felt differently.
Right. But, yeah. You know, I mean, and so if we operate under the assumption that whether or not you are a supporter of the police in general, you know, which I think is kind of it ends up being a little bit of a silly conversation.
Yes, it does.
You know, just as a generalization. But generally speaking, they are largely understaffed, right? And underfunded.
Right.
Just first responders in general. You know that amongst many other pieces of education they receive when they're getting trained is that they're trying to deal, you know, one of the things they are trained in is how to expect to deal with confrontation in a way that respects the law, right? In a lawful way. That right there, though, unfortunately, it's not necessarily a way that's equitable to all the citizens that they come in contact with, you know, whether it be because of prejudice or, you know, preconceived notions or whatever. And that's you know, that's just messed up. That's not necessarily any one particular person's fault, or even, you know, the training manual's fault. It just, that's the way it is.
Yeah. So, sure.
You know, now you're getting, you know, it sounds like a subtle difference, but it's you're putting everybody involved, the law enforcement, you know, the cop, the victim or the perpetrator, they're, you know, no matter who's right, who's wrong, everybody is in a life-altering situation, potentially yeah. life-altering situation. Every single day, the gravity is severe and supreme, you know. So it's not a recipe for success. So if you have somebody who has sent these texts, who has shown that you know, they're a little bit loose with the mouth, you know, or the thumbs or whatever, you know, when it comes to issues of race, that should be a red flag. Now, we obviously know as grown-ups that, you know, if that was going to be the red flag,
right,
a lot of people would be on the bench and already.
Basically, there'd be almost no police officers, yes.
Right. You know, it was just literally this woman got 10 years for something that was so, there could not be a worse set of circumstances for an officer to shoot a white officer to shoot a black person.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like, you were in his house.
Yep.
He was unarmed.
Yep.
He was not the aggressor. You had the gun. You used the gun. You killed the man. Period.
That's the end of the story. Yeah. I didn't see it any other way. I, you know, with or without emotion involved in skin color or any of that, like, that's basically just what it is. That's the answer. You know what
I'm saying? Think about this. If this had happened, the exact same thing had happened any place other than Mr. Jean's home, she would very likely not have been judged guilty.
That's probably the likelihood. And if it happened in reverse, he probably would have gotten 25 years. But the other thing, you mentioned police being understaffed and everything. There are a lot of stances a lot of people take with the police. I tend to just distance myself from them. I don't want to speak to them. I don't want to know them. I don't want to be around them. I get it. They're people too. And I'm sure that they're, you know, good and bad people on the planet as is. I just sort of distance myself. And one of the reasons why I think I distance myself is because I don't think that people work very well with the mental health of police officers. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think that their mental health is a prime discussion in law enforcement. You know, they need to be debriefed and de-escalated almost every day they leave work, in my opinion. You know, because as a police officer, what we're asking you to do every single day is take yesterday's tragic situations that you've been through and the repetitive nature of that, you know, seeing children die, being in horrible situations, not being able to save this person that, you know, is not receiving the exact medical attention they need at the moment, being called out for something that's absolutely silly, like, oh, this black man is sitting in front of my apartment and you're now the bad guy because you were called, you know, all those things. But every single day, you're carrying that into tomorrow. You're going to carry that into tomorrow. And when you approach the next situation, you're going to apply that bias to the next situation, you know?
Yeah.
If you so happen to think that when a person takes off their uniform, they don't apply those same biases on the street as a regular person, then you're crazy.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's basically how this all goes. All of the difficulties that go into police work are acknowledged and understood. Well, I don't want to say understood, but just acknowledged. Yeah. That is a difficult job, a very difficult profession. But the mental health of police officers, really the mental health of our whole nation, but the mental health of police officers needs to be prioritized, because I think these things are what happens. You know, these reactions are what happens. So
absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, but it's still a difficult one for me, man. Like this one's really tough. But moving on to the next subject. All right, I'm going to preface this segue because it sounds very insincere when I read it back after that conversation. I said, continuing the subject of women out here killing it. Now, it's a horrible, horrible joke. What? However, the women we're going to talk about next are killing it in the record and entertainment industry. You know what I'm saying?
That was terrible.
That was really bad. But, you know,
I quit.
They'll do less years of a hard time than Amber will. All right. So when you posted this, you said truth or not, right? True or not.
Right.
So when it came to workforce and production staffing, Warner Media is close to gender parity, source deadline.com says. So Warner Media released their first diversity and inclusion interim report, which covered the year 2018 when it came to the diversity and inclusion in its corporate operations, as well as films, television, series, digital content created by its various properties. When it came to workforce and production staffing, Kev, Warner Media is close to gender parity, per their report. On a global level, the workforce is 54% male and 46% female, while in the U.S., it's 53% male and 47% female. More good news for women was revealed that globally, half of all the new hires and promotions were to vice president and above positions. So we'll stop there. So you're questioning whether this is actually true or not, or whether the data is off. What is your question here?
Well, my, you know, the first question, and I think it was sort of addressed somewhere in the fact is that there's an effort being made. So in a vacuum, that's a positive thing, right?
Right.
If you're talking about jobs across the board, you know, what are the, I think the thing that most people are very keenly focused on is sort of executive level, decision makers, you know, because those are the people, you know, whether they be female or whether they be LGBTQ, whether they be people of color, are going to be, you know, for a company as unique as this, making decisions that, you know, create content that can cater to those larger communities. So that's really important. But nevertheless, the numbers, one would assume, do appear to be trending, you know, in an encouraging direction. Let's keep it real that the bar has been relatively low, you know, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. It's not worth sort of taking stock in some way celebrating briefly the positive trajectory of it. But my question is more just like, yeah, what is that? What's really going on? Who's really making the decisions? Not so much to complain about it, but it's like this report was produced by one of the most powerful media companies in the world, right?
Right.
So to me, they sure as hell they better be able to produce a visually and emotionally compelling report. They can tell whatever story they want to tell, but in this case, you know, it's telling a compelling story, showing some growth. there is another 99.9% of corporate America that probably isn't doing as good of a job at addressing these issues.
Absolutely. You
know,
absolutely.
Much less communicating the history that, you know, where they come from and where they look to be headed, where they are now on that path. So, you know, I think between the two of us, generally, we're not trying to like shit on, you know, somebody being able to say, all right, we're trying to.
But I think I want to throw this out there real quick. So they also said that they need to work on getting people of color into the workforce. They said 42% of the workforce in non-manager positions are people of color. That percentage tends to decrease as you move up the ladder to senior levels.
Right.
So I had to do a training on unconscious bias, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in that training, there were a few people of color in there. Just, you know, another black woman and myself, a black male. You know, an Indian dude, an Asian dude, and, you know, hardly any women particularly, right? But one of the complaints that came up from these well-to-do, or I don't want to diss them, but these white males was like, why this is a thing, right? Just pick the most qualified person. You know, why are we trying to include? Like, it seems like this was their response. It seems like you're creating a bias in order to fix a bias, right? My response was, well, you cannot fix a bias without a bias. It's not possible. The other part of my response was, look, man, for the last 100 years, you've been on top. Like, the fix is going to be harsh. But I understand the reality of what's being said. If you're a white male sitting in a room and your company says, we are going to be more diverse, we are going to hire more women, we are going to hire more people of color. If you're a white male, you basically are saying, okay, well, I'm not going to get hired, because that's basically what they're saying, right? And I'm saying, welcome to the show.
Right. Exactly.
Welcome to the party. This is what the jam is like.
This is, I have so many responses to that, because, you know, let me get deep in my lack of sports acumen, but, and I don't know if you know this either, but when it comes to hockey, and I'm bringing up hockey for a very transparent reason, am I correct that when cats get thrown in the penalty box, the team is working shorthanded, right?
Yes.
That should have been the first thing out of your mouth. You know how you like hockey, right, Jim? We've been playing roughly 5 to 6 players on our squad shorthanded in the penalty box for about 400 years. They were bullshit calls.
They were really bullshit calls. But here's the other thing, Kev, to add to your point, though. What I tried to say in a less, you know, in a much more chill way was, the other thing is, if there are 4 available positions on the sea level, right?
Mm-hmm.
Me, the Asian homie Kev, the women on the 5th floor of all the diversities, the Mexican homie Carlos, we all competing for 1 out of those 4 spots.
Right.
Y'all got the other 3 on lock. You know what I'm saying? Y'all got the other 3 on lock. And that's just in 1 company. Imagine the fact that, like you said earlier, 99% of companies ain't doing this, ain't doing what Warner's trying to do. So the odds are stacked heavily against people of color and women getting into VP and C-level positions, higher-level positions.
Right, yeah.
But they couldn't, and that was the thing this article immediately struck me, because it was like, that was what they were arguing in there. And I'm going, wow, you really don't see this, do you? And, like, and how that, do you not see it?
That's not the thing. That the what, you know, what needs to be understood, because we certainly can express it in many different ways and try and bring metaphors to the table to make, to personalize it. But the simple fact is that what they are looking at as the finish line is really just, you know, a few steps beyond the starting line. And what I right. mean by that is if you're trying to fill a slot, that's not a goal. It's good to have it because we're not even there yet. But there are so many steps before that that are messed up, and there are so many reasons why not getting beyond that goal is shortchanging not only you know, people in these groups, these affected groups, but also your company, you know, potentially, especially if you're right. a media company, you know, who's right. speaking to the entire world. I mean, just look what's happening right now in politics with you know, Biden's son, Trump's kids. It's like, I don't know anything about Hunter Biden, but Trump's kids are idiots. And
for real.
So if right there already, and it's not like their dad was the super smart guy who just ended up having idiot children because he never spent time with them. They're all idiots. So
right.
So that, but that legacy is the thing that's given them the pathway to whatever success that they have until hopefully that runs out, right? But that's the same thing that that's the path. That's the road. That's the road map for many, many people in America. You know, and it's not to say that everybody in America who has better access to opportunity is by default just as stupid as Donald Trump Jr. But if you have access to that success, it does make things a little bit easier, right? That much more accessible. That's what you're talking about. So if you're having a meeting like this and you're bringing in the one black dude, the one Asian dude, the one Indian dude, and no women, that should already tell you something about your company, because if they might be the only ones there to pull into that meeting, you know? So yeah, you know, and it's something that I think people are starting to understand, and it's not like, you know, I'm not going to give them a Bible and give them a hug for what they're doing, but I mean, but what they have to understand is like, you know, the thing that always bothers me about this type of report, and it doesn't bother me, I don't get fussy about it.
Well, you know, thank you this time, but, at least.
It's like a lifelong smoker, right? Who's right. celebrating 1 week off cigarettes. It's like, that's good. You do realize you have to keep not smoking in order right. to live, right? Or right. for, you know, 400 or 500 pound person who, you know, signed up for the gym and has the Diet Coke in hand, is like, this is it, I'm doing it. It's like,
yeah,
cool, man, do your thing, you know, I see you. But good intentions are much more, you know, much closer to like a good PR than they are to good results.
That's brilliant. That's brilliantly stated, because I think that's why a lot of people don't trust it, because it does seem like good PR. That's really what it seems like, right? Like, when companies do this, it just seems like you're trying to show out, like, oh, we did it. And, you know, California passed a law where that has to be one woman on every board, you know, company board. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, I've recently, as last week, just been kind of reading around, and companies are bragging about having a woman on the board. And I'll look, and that company's in California, and I'm like, oh, no. You didn't do that. You know, out of a progressive ideology, it doesn't seem like it. It just seemed like you're following the law. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
and, I mean, you know, and it's all good. It's like, this came from, I think I pulled this from Deadline. It's about Warner Media. It, you know, the entertainment industry has a lot of issues that people don't associated with the entertainment industry, but the entertainment industry by and large attempts to be more awakened than the average corporate entity. But you know, look at some of the environment, you know, not environmental, but some of the industries in California that whose output affects the environment. They see the positive impact in what has been handed down in terms of regulation, to the extent that they are trying to continue to maintain some of the regulations that are getting pulled back. And that's dollars and cents, right?
Yeah.
And it's sad that it has to be dollars and cents when it comes to people's lives and opportunities and children's lives and opportunities. But I mean, shit, at the end of the day, it's business.
It's business.
And I think part of what happens, I'm hoping, is that, hey, if you tell everybody they need one woman on the board, they're going to see that, well, hey, we were a bunch of idiots running this company.
Right.
And this woman came in and she showed us, hey, you guys are a bunch of idiots. Because guess what happened? Guess who half of your customers are that you're not dealing with, you know?
Well, yeah, it's very simple, man. If you get around different people, you learn different things.
Right.
It's just, it doesn't seem like that should stop in professional environments. It works in bars.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It can work. If it could work in a damn bar, it could work, you know, almost anywhere else in the world. But you know what? I don't want to dead horse that subject because I want to get to the next one real quick because I died laughing at your title.
Let's do it. Wait, that was your title.
No, wasn't did it? I say Stacey Hands? I thought you said, man, I thought it was yours. Maybe. I was giving you props for it.
Okay.
Stacey Hands, yo. Stacey Hands. I got something I got to do on this when it comes down to after the explanation. Yo, people out there, Stacey Dash has put hands on her husband for trying to choke her out. Allegedly, reports TMZ. All right. So just a couple of days ago, or just last week, per the time of this recording, Stacey Dash and her current husband, Jeffrey Marti, a lawyer, got in a, let's say, kerfuffle, little scuffle there, you know, little tizzy.
Uh-huh.
And you know, Stacey don't do tizzies.
Little
squabble. And Stacey don't do tizzies, man. Mm. Stacey ain't messing around. Stacey called the police and explained to them that her husband had just tried to put her in the chokehold, and she put hands on him. Basically, she said it in a very polite Stacey Dash-esque way, but she put hands on him. So I have one thing to say, and I shout out to my man Omega. Shout out to all my New York listeners. I just want to make sure that I'm doing this right. You know what I'm saying? Bronx, stand up right now. Bronx, stand up. Bull. Booyaka. Bronx, stand up in the building. This is what we do, son. Yeah. Just want to make sure I did that right. You know what I mean?
I think jury's out, I think. Is she from the Bronx?
She is from the Bronx.
I didn't know that. Because I'm going to start by saying that most of the time I hear her speak, because she's super conservative, right? Like,
Yeah, she is.
She comes across like a real bona fide horse's ass most of the time.
Generally, all the time. She still sounds like she's on Clueless.
Actually, I think worse. But this is another race issue, which is, as I understand it, she made the 911 call.
Yes, she did.
How did she end up in bracelets?
Well, because, look, and this is the crazy thing. Now, peep this. They took her in because he didn't have any marks on him, or she didn't have any marks on her, but he had marks on him. But if you listen, this is why I wrote this down. If you listen to the 911 call, it sounded like his 15-year-old daughter popped off.
Right.
And Stacey, you know, was like, Bronx, stand up. And, you know what I'm saying? It was like, sit down. And then he, you know, tried to basically either de-escalate the situation or, hey, don't put your hands on my daughter. And she was like, Bronx, stand up. and shut all that down. And then it sounded like the whole family was you know, barking on her, and she was on the phone, and she just said, okay, well, I'm going to leave. And then the cops took her. But if you take that exact situation, Kev, and you put that into any other group of people, that dude is going to jail.
He's going to, at least for the weekend.
At least for the weekend, yes.
Yeah, so she gets knocked, and then she does the reverse Rachel Dolezal. and puts down that she's white, right? On the what?
I didn't even know you could write that.
I thought, you know, they would just have Amber Geiger sitting there at the desk.
Right, with the gun out.
She looked white.
Right, I'm off duty.
Yeah. So, yeah. Old Stacy. Old Clueless.
This is the quote that got me on the thing. It kind of actually speaks to, you know, you saying how she sounds like a full-on horse's ass whenever she speaks. And maybe she explained it, Kev. I think she actually explained it in her 911 call. The officer asked her how many people were involved in the situation.
Right.
Stacy responded, 3 children, 1 adult, and myself.
But how many people were actually there?
5. 3 children and what should be 2 adults.
Well, yeah.
But she was like, I am neither child nor adult. I am full on horse's ass, and I would not, you know.
They were scrapping in front of a bunch of children.
Well, I mean, the 15-year-old seemed, if the way that she tells the story, the 15-year-old ran up, and that's, you know.
The 15-year-old should have just caught a, you know, chancleta to the side of the head, and that would be that, you know.
That
would
be the end of it, because half of her knows how to throw that, at least a quarter of her. But, yeah, that's how it goes. But listen, Bronx in the building, you know what I'm saying, Fat Man Scoop, Crooklyn Clinton, whatever. Like, I don't know what to yell. I just know it in New York needs to be live right now. Stacy, as way out as Stacy Dash is gone, the Bronx is still in the building.
She went all the way up.
Why did I like yell Crooklyn Clan? Like, it's not, that's not Brooklyn, by the way. I don't even know. Like, I just feel like he's air horn, you know, whatever.
This is for hip-hop.
Bronx in the building.
Started rapping Beat Street.
You know what I'm saying? Just straight old school drums for no reason. I love all my New York family. Like, I love y'all. Like, y'all, for real. This is how you always know you're going to say something crazy, right? When you start off like that. But
he said, I love you. But,
man, when y'all are getting ready to fight, I swear to God, like, it's like you guys are reciting Paid in Full. Every time, like, does there need to be a speech, yo? Why is there a speech?
Oh my god!
Like, why are we? It just—it's a whole thing. I'm like, this is a thing, man. It's been 5 minutes of what?
Wait, hold on. Narrative voice. This is the point in the podcast where Kev left the building.
No, it's not. No, you can stay here because it's actually true. It's like a 5 minute. It's not an argument. It's a speech. And I want to know why people do that. Like, look, are we going to fight? Or are you going, you know, recite all the lines from Juice? I don't get it. What are we doing?
Wow. All right,
anyway, wow. I still love y'all, though. Yeah. New York people, yeah. Those are my folks.
Oh, man.
Oh, snap.
What?
I didn't even realize I had connected the next subject.
Okay.
Like, I didn't realize the connection.
All right.
The title, Kev, is brilliant. Here's to the crazy ones. Cheers, man. Cheers, Kev.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
No, and ironically,
no Apple products.
No Apple. Ironically, in the Bronx Zoo.
Yep. Oh, yeah. All day.
Bronx in the building. What up, son? In the Bronx Zoo, lion woman Maya Autry rapped on Instagram while NYPD hunts for her. This is super New York. What?
Her
the way honest? Yeah,
man. Her her entire deal escalated with a dramatic quickness in the matter of like 48 hours. It was crazy. But
I love every second of it, by the way.
And we should say, because we mentioned her name, she's the lion lady. She's the one who jumped in the, at the Bronx Zoo, she jumped in the lion enclosure, right?
Yeah, yeah. For those of you guys who don't know, there was a woman in the Bronx Zoo that jumped into the lion enclosure. She made it out alive, but she's being looked for by the NYPD for, you know, for entering a lion's enclosure at a zoo. Like, that is something you're not supposed to do.
Yeah. She's blazing trails, though. You know, let's put this out there. She's blazing trails. She's the Hidden Figures of crazy zoo stuff because she's a African American queen.
This is a
jumping in the cage with the
lions. Listen, this is part. This is the second time, man. Shout out to Harambe. I don't. Is this? This is black people's white moment, like just being in enclosures and zoos.
This is something
that I don't. What's up with that? Like,
she's
Jesse
Owens of stupid.
I'm trying to figure it out. Like, why is this a thing that black folks keep doing?
Wait, Harambe was not a black person, was it?
No, Harambe was the actual. No.
I mean the person who jumped in and got.
Yeah, I think it was a young black boy.
A kid? I can't remember. I don't remember.
A kid. It was a kid. Yeah.
And then Harambe caught the L because of that.
Yeah, Harambe caught the L.
Damn.
Yeah.
I mean, did you look at the? Did you see the lion? The lion was just like. I was like, I don't even know really what's going on. Like, is this After Effects, like some green screen kind of? Because the lion just looked like, the lion was like, listen, look, lady, I'm trying to keep my head down, do my time in peace. and literally, I see the lion look to the side. He's like, are you seeing this?
Yeah. There needs to be a breakdown in his reaction or her reaction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She said to the police, this is the prelude. This is the, at the end of Hit 'Em Up, how Tupac just kept talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, Maya on her, before her verse, she did that part. She said, if I walked in the lion's den, do you think for 1 second I'm scared of a handcuff? I'm scared of a jail cell. You know what I'm saying?
She was styling.
And I'm not eating your food if you lock me up.
You're like, all right,
cool.
Oh, man.
The whole time she was nibbling on a spinach leaf and sporting a crown of twigs.
I Googled Lion Lady, I think, and something from cosmopolitan.com, which I think is just because I have like mad cosmopolitan.com cookies in my browser popped up. The headline, though, was a Bronx Zoo visitor taunted a lion and could have died after jumping into its den in upsetting viral video. I'm like, she just got off the 2 train.
She's
not scared of nothing. Come on, man.
She went from one lion's den to another. It's not a big deal. She'll be perfectly fine.
Oh, man. Can we juxtapose that, though, with another story?
I'm with it.
So the name of this story is we had this is a competing headlines. Mine was hey lady, have a ball. Trek, what was yours?
What was mine? I actually don't have it written.
Trek's
down. What
was it? Teabagged by a camel.
So, Kemp, tell her what happened.
Yeah, I know we're running short on time. So basically, there's a truck stop somewhere in the world. Come on, let's face it, it's in America. Where... they have a camel enclosure. It's in Louisiana. Of course it's in Louisiana because where camels are born.
Yep.
There's a truck stop in Louisiana that has a camel. That really should be the whole story. But no, it does not stop there. So this couple shows up at the truck stop, and they have a dog. And the husband is playing fetch with the dog, throws the ball to the dog. The ball goes into the camel enclosure. Dog goes after it. The woman goes to save the dog. The camel lays down on the woman. The yeah. only recourse that the woman finds to be able to get out from under the camel is to bite the camel right in the beans.
Mouthful of camel nuts. Sack.
She just, balls deep. Oh my God, dude. What? Oh. And live to tell about it.
And
luckily they didn't kill the camel. I think they got in trouble too. They got arrested, didn't they? Or they got charged.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Yep.
First of all, her husband was totally setting her up.
Oh, man.
He's like, how can I get rid of this?
Exactly. You know what? And if he wanted to get rid of her, he was like, yo, you cheated on me.
And I saw
it happen.
That was, but I took it a different way. I felt like he did that and then he saw what she did and he's like, oh. Yeah. You never did that for me.
How long did she struggle before she decided? Like, I actually felt bad for her. Like, oh, man.
Yeah.
If that was the last possible, you know, recourse. Woo, boy.
They were at a truck stop. She needed a new set of truck nuts, maybe. All right, that's all I got.
Hey, you guys have been listening to Rap Sucks Radio. From one horrible segue to a whole lot of me shouting out the Bronx hilariously to us talking about camels putting balls in women's mouths.
Mm.
I'm glad you stuck with us.
It's been a journey.
It's been quite a journey. RapSucksRadio.com. You can catch us on any platform, I think, except for Pandora, right, Kev? Except for Pandora at this point.
Yeah, man.
They out here tripping. But any podcast platform, I am your homeboy, Trek Life, and that is your fam, Kev Sakota.
Camel.
Holla at us on RSR Podcast on Facebook, where we post links to all the stories that we talk about on the show. We post clips of the show on our Instagram, Rap Sucks Radio. And you guys can discuss and holler at it, get down with us. Please like, subscribe, comment. Just, you know what I'm saying? Do all of that. Let us know, man. Let the people know about us.
Word.
And with that being said, we'll holler at y'all next week. Count of three, we say peace. One, two, three.
Peace. That was good.